cars in a driveway. The garage is full of junk. It'll take me a week to clean it, but by then I'll still be drunk. I got the blues. Oh, the homeowner blues. Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle. Homeowner blues.
Hello and welcome to this, the third episode of the Homeowner's Friend Podcast. I'm Steve, your host, and today's topic is going to be hard stuff, concrete and cement. A quick thanks goes out to Daryl Dodge for allowing me to use his theme song here in the podcast. Daryl's a nice guy and he's got some pretty cool songs, so if you want to go to the website, our website, which is www.hof.com. Like in Homeowner's Friend, HOFpodcast.com. You can go to his page, and that links up to his MySpace page and has a couple of his songs on it and stuff. So you can listen and find out where to purchase his music. Just a nice guy. Just a quick plug out there for Daryl. Moving right along into the world of concrete and cement. It's everywhere. We know that. It's in every bridge. It's in the bridge supports. It's in the bridge deck. It's a lot of times the road is made out of it. Jersey barriers. Just talking about road stuff. I mean, it's just everywhere. The drainage, the catch basins, the pipes under the ground are often made of cement. The stuff's everywhere. There's cement underneath every light pole, every stop light post. It holds up the big towers that hold up our cell phones. It's everywhere. It's in our homes. It's in our basements, holding up our house. It's the stone foundation which we build our house on. It's in businesses, again, as foundations. Some buildings are actually made of concrete, and you can have a concrete house. And if you're in an area where there's some nasty weather, like tornadoes, probably not a bad idea to consider that. I don't think they cost much more, and they're a hell of a lot more rugged. I would certainly rather be in a nice, strong concrete house than in a stick-built house any day if there was a tornado coming. So something to consider. But as I said, concrete, it's everywhere. I mean, you look at your average skyscraper or parking garage, they're full. Just hearing a little noise here on the podcast. I don't like noises. The parking garage is probably completely made of steel reinforced concrete, and the high rise building probably has a lot in there as well. Obviously, it's in the foundation, but it's also probably what makes up most of the floors and perhaps even some of the walls within the building. And they use slightly different variations of concrete. There's some lighter weight concrete and stuff like that, but it's still basically concrete. So it's, like I say, it's everywhere. It's basically the basis of our built society, I think, these days. So, I just want to get a little bit into the terminology, and I screw this up all the time myself, but I'm just going to tell you what it is, because I don't want you to sound like a fool when you go buy cement or order concrete. So you need to know what the difference, because cement is not concrete and concrete is not cement. It's actually two different things, although one's in the other. But anyway, first of all, a little quiz. Can you go to Home Depot or Lowe's or your local hardware store and buy a cement mixer? The answer is no. You can't buy a cement mixer. You can buy a concrete mixer. There would be no need to mix cement. it's kind of a quick, a trick question there, folks. Cement is a binder. Cement is something that holds other things together. You can have like a Duco cement or a model cement. You can have JB Weld is like an epoxy cement. There's a lot of different cement. There's kinds of cement that they use to fix your teeth. You know, when they put a filling in, that's a form of cement. They mix the different metals and stuff together, and it has a cement type in there that holds it together, and they stick it up in your tooth. Cement's everywhere. And there's a cement that's known as Portland cement. Portland cement is not a brand name, but rather it is a type of cement. Like stainless is a type of steel. So you'll see the bags in your local store that say Portland cement. It's not made by the Portland company, or it's not made in Portland, you know, Connecticut, or Portland, you know, wherever. It's just what it is. It's Portland cement. All different kinds of companies make it. Portland cement is probably the most important ingredient in concrete. Concrete is a mixture of cement, Portland cement. You would want to make concrete out of JB Weld, although it would be very strong, but you would need an awful lot of it, and it would really make a mess of your mixer. But it's a mixture of Portland cement, sandstone, and water. All mixed in the proper ratios, gives you nice, strong concrete, which is what you use to make things. There's three different. I'm not going to go into how concrete's made, but it is made. It's not mined as concrete. Basically, there's a long. I'll say it to you really quick. There's like a long tube, a big round tube. It's probably, I don't know how big around it is. Maybe 10 or 15 feet around. And it's very long. It's probably 300 feet long. And it's superheated in the middle to like 3,000 degrees. And it's slightly tilted, so one end's a little bit higher than the other. And the thing sits there and rotates. And in one end, they put in the raw ingredients that make cement. And they tumble and tumble down this tube. Of course, being slightly slanted, they'll kind of keep tumbling. But as they tumble, they start slowly moving towards the other end. And they get heated up. They get heated up in that tunnel, and they actually change their chemical properties and become different substances. And what falls out the other end are little clinkers, little chunks of concrete. Little chunks of cement. Here I go with the terminology, too, because I screw them up myself all the time also. The cement comes out the other end, little chunks, and they take that and they grind it up into a powder, basically. And that's what is known as Portland cement. Sometimes they add, some other ingredients in if needed, depending on what it's going to be used for. But that's basically how they make it. So it is a manufactured good. It's not something that's just, dug out of the ground somewhere. It is made in a factory, so to speak, or in a plant. There's like four different kinds of cement, and there's a couple of subtypes, and I'll go through them really quick. It's not complicated. What you're going to use generally is a general purpose cement, which is otherwise known as Portland cement type 1. Type 1 is the designation, and it's a general purpose cement. And you'll see it when you go into the store. It'll say Portland cement type 1 or whatever. There's a type 2 which deals a little bit better with a very wet application when it's curing mainly, and also it deals better with higher levels of sulfates if you have those in your ground. I pretty much will take one or two. I don't really care which one I get. They're both interchangeable as far as I'm concerned and what I do with cement and concrete, but you can see what's available where you live. There's a type 3 which generates less heat when it cures. All cement generates heat. It's a chemical reaction, and most chemical reactions create heat, and that one's not no exception to that rule. And the problem is if you're making a really huge pour, well, you're not going to do it. But if you're putting in something like a dam where you're using a million yards of concrete, you'll probably want to use that type 3 to help keep the cement from making so much heat that it actually hurts itself. Engineers know how to deal with all this. We don't need to. But I'll just give you the cute little story that when they made the Hoover Dam, which has, millions of yards of concrete in it, they actually ran lines through the dam when they were building it for the express purpose of doing nothing but cooling the dam as it cured. So that's pretty fascinating. And there's a type 4, which deals with really, really high levels of sulfates. And again, I don't think it's something you really need to worry about. And the type 1, 2, and 3 also come in a in an A form. It'll be like type 1A, type 2A, type 3A, or whatever. And those the A's mean that the concrete is air entrained. And I'm just telling you this as a generic knowledge. I mean, mixing cement at home or concrete at home, you're pretty much only going to be able to find type 1 or maybe type 2 at your store. You're not going to be able to buy air entrained concrete mix. I mean, it just doesn't exist for homeowners for the most part. At least I haven't seen it. It may be available in certain places, but I haven't seen it. So I'm just telling you for information. But I will talk about air entraining a little bit in the future because it is kind of important if you're going to put in a driveway or something like that. So as I said, cement is mixed with aggregates, sand and stone, to make concrete. And it has to be mixed in a certain ratio or it won't come out correctly and be as strong as it needs to be. And on the Portland Cement Association website, which, by the way, I got to give them thanks. I downloaded the little cheat sheet that they have on all the basics of concrete and cement. And I took in, I'm using that as a filler here for some of the more technical details that I didn't know about to begin with. And it's a good, I'll put a link to it on the website if you want to take a look at it and learn a little bit more about cement and concrete. They give a ratio on there of what it should be as far as how much cement you should use, how much water and all that. But I think it's more for batch mixing, for mixing big batches. For the homeowner, I'm going to give you my secret recipe, which is about as secret as, our president's name. it is kind of the generic mixture that everybody uses. It's a 1-2-3 mix, and it's pretty simple. One part of cement, which is good because that's also the most expensive part, two parts of sand, and three parts of stone. And you mix that up, add water, and you got yourself some concrete. Now, when I say part, it can be whatever you're using for measuring. It could be a heaping shovel full, a normal shovel full. It could be a small bucket full. It could be a cup. You know, if you're making a really small amount of cement to maybe fix a crack or something, you might just use, one cup of cement, two cups of sand, and three cups of stone or something like that to make a very small amount if you need to do that. If you are doing patching, you probably don't want to put stone in it just because the stone are big and the patch is small and it won't work very well. So you probably won't want to use stone, or maybe you'll use very small stone or something. But anyway, I digress. So whatever you use to mix, you use that ratio, and you what I generally do is I throw that in the mixer first. I have a small concrete mixer that I bought. It's a big plastic tube with a motor on it, electric motor, and it spins and does a good job of mixing, mixing up the concrete. I basically throw the dry. I usually throw the sand in, and then I throw the stone, and then last I'll throw the cement mix in itself, and I'll let that twirl for a second dry just to kind of get it mixed up, and then I start adding water last, and I just use my hose and I start spraying it in there. But I've probably made 1,000 batches of cement in my days, so I kind of know what to do. But as a beginner, you want to add the water slowly because you don't want the cement to be too wet. You want the cement to be wet, but you want it to be firm and solid. You don't want it to be soupy or runny. It's kind of a, you want it to be almost like a peanut butter consistency. So you can grab some of it and kind of squeeze it in your hand and make a little column and hold the column up, and it should stay there. It shouldn't just collapse on itself from being too wet. You don't really want it so dry either that it's like crumbly. It's got to be wet and pliable and whatnot, but it's also got to be firm so it doesn't slump, collapse down. So that's it's kind of a trick. If you add too much water, it's no big deal. Just throw a little bit more cement and stone and sand in the correct ratios, and it'll thicken right up again. It's no big deal. I mean, unless you get really ridiculous and put 20 extra gallons or something. But that's why I say add it in slowly, and you won't go wrong. You want to make sure it's mixed thoroughly. Let the machine run for a minute or two after you think it's done anyway, just to make sure there's no clumps of sand that didn't get mixed in, or make sure the cement's all evenly mixed through the whole mix. If there's no cement in between the particles of sand and stone, they will not stick together, and your cement will be weak, and it will crumble, and it's just not a good thing. The other thing to watch out for, too, when you're mixing it, and as a new person, you'll figure this out pretty quick, is that you really need to scrape around. Like, if you're mixing it by hand, or even if you're in a machine, you want to make sure that you scrape around the edges of the bucket or whatever, because the wet, like when you put the sand in, it gets wet, it tends to clump in the corners and stuff, and you'll go to pour it, and you'll find out that half the sand is still stuck in the bottom of the bucket in the corners, and you never mixed it with the cement, so it'll screw your ratios up. So you want to make sure you scrape, with a shovel or whatever, or even if it's in the cement mixer, you might want to just keep an eye on it and make sure that it's falling off the walls of the mixer correctly, so it's not clumping there and not mixing correctly. It's pretty important. And you just go ahead and use the concrete. Once that's all done, you have a concrete mix. It is no longer cement. It is a concrete mix. Now, I'm not going to get into pouring concrete at this point and talk about forms and everything else. This is actually the second time I did this podcast. I tried to get into that the first time, and it was just too much to get into in one podcast. So I'm going to leave it to probably another podcast I'll do. Probably during the home construction process, but this series, the basic series, I want you to just kind of know about the products and basically how they work, and then we'll get into actually using them in the series when we actually go through the steps of building a house. So when you do work with concrete, though, I want to tell you that you want to make sure you do it on a nice day. If it's too cold, like below 50 degrees, the concrete will set up or dry very slowly, if at all. If it's really cold, it might not set up at all. It'll just sit there. And the problem there is you'll never get to finish it. It won't cure. It's not good. And if it's too hot, just the opposite happens. It cures too darn fast. And you really need to know what you're doing to deal with cement in hot weather, because it sets up so fast that it'll get ahead of you. You'll be finishing one corner of the pour, and the other corner will already be hard, type of deal. So I don't know what they do in Texas and Arizona, where it's really dry and really hot. That stuff probably hardens in the cement mixer as it's mixing. I don't think it's that bad, but down there you got to really work quick. I mean, if you do live in those parts of the country and it gets really hot in the summer, I recommend doing the pours very, very early in the morning before it gets that hot. So you want to pick a nice day. Probably 50 to 70 degrees is the best temperature to work with cement. If it's raining a little bit, that's not really a problem for the cement, but it'd probably be a problem for you, and you'll be getting your you'll be getting your dry cement wet, as it sits out in the rain, and that's not good, because it'll start to set up on you before it even gets put in the mix. So, if there's a little rain forecasted or whatever, and you think you can get it done by then, that's rain hitting the concrete after it's poured is a good thing. It's not a bad thing, as long as it's pretty well set up by then. So, watch the weather forecast. Let's talk about, besides mixing, I'm just going to grab some coffee here. If you're going to do a large project, instead of mixing it by hand or with a machine, you can also, of course, order ready-mix cement that comes in a big truck. And there's like two types of these deliveries that they're making these days, and I'm second type's kind of neat, but you have the primary delivery method, which is the big old truck. You've seen them. It's a big round tub on the truck that spins as it goes down the road, and it's got a big chute in the front, and they can deliver from a couple of yards or a yard up to 15 or 20 yards in one truck. I don't know what the limit is. I hardly ever use it. I do most of my concrete work myself, but hand mixing, but they hold an awful lot of concrete. The cost up here in New England is about $100 a yard to have concrete delivered. But when we, you know, a yard of concrete's an awful lot of concrete. I mean, you can put a whole sidewalk in with a yard of concrete. The problem is most of these guys have a 3-yard minimum. Because they don't want to, mix the stuff and drive all the way out to your house to, you know, to deliver 1 yard of concrete. It's not worth it to them. It costs more in diesel fuel, and it's, they don't make any money on it. So usually there's a 3-yard minimum. So it costs you at least $300 to get a truck out to your house. And that's why I tell you how to mix it yourself, because it's a lot cheaper. I mean, you can do a whole sidewalk for probably $50 doing it yourself. And you don't have to deal with the 3-yard minimum. But there's another route now too that they have. They have these trucks that mix it for you on site. They actually have there's a container on the truck full of water. There's a container on the truck full of sand and stone, and there's a container on the truck full of Portland cement. And the machine pulls up in front of your house, and you tell the guy, "I want a half a yard, or I want a yard, or whatever." And the machine actually mixes the ingredients right there in your driveway. And then it pours them out just like a regular concrete truck does, where you need it. And it's kind of mixed right on site, which has some advantages. It's very fresh concrete, so it'll be a little bit slower to set up, which is better if you're a novice. It gives you a little bit. You know, you got to remember when the cement's mixed at the plant, and it's driving to your house, it's still mixing, so it stays soft. But it is technically starting to set up, or starting to think about setting up as it goes to your house. It's also warming up. So that concrete, especially on a warmer day, will set up a little quicker than if you mixed it right at your site, like these other trucks do. They charge more per yard for the concrete, but they don't have a minimum. So, I don't know how much cheaper it'll be. But if you only need a yard, it might be a way to go if you don't want to mix it yourself. So, you know, if you're only going to do one or two little projects with concrete, there's no point in going out and mixing going out and buying a mixer and all that. You could just do it that way. So it's something to look into. I forget what they call those. I've never used that service. I have seen them. They're definitely in the phone book. If you look under Ready Mix, I'm sure they'll be advertised as, I don't know what they call them, some small batch or something. So you can buy the concrete already made from them. And I'll tell you a little bit also, when you go into to Home Depot or Lowe's or your local store, and I always use Home Depot or Lowe's as kind of the name for the generic hardware store, but I kind of cringe every time I do it. I personally like to use the local stores more. I think they care more. I think they have better service. And a lot of times they have better products, and a lot of times they actually have cheaper prices than you'll find at Home Depot and Lowe's. But Home Depot and Lowe's are awful convenient because they're open on Sundays, they're open late at night, and things like that. So they have their place, and you know, whatever. They do what they do, and they do it well. That's why they're so busy. But anyway, when you go in to buy cement mix, you're going to see a couple different flavors there. You'll have the standard Portland cement type 1 or type 2 or whatever they charge. But you're also going to find there bags of, I don't know, they call it different things in different places, but it's like a bags of ready mix, concrete mix. There's some different brands locally. I don't even know what they are because I never buy this stuff, but it's smaller bags. A bag of cement is typically a 90-pound bag. It's a pretty big bag. If you touch it, it's firm, but it's kind of soft almost because it's filled with like talcum powder. I mean, cement is a very fine powder, and you usually see it spilled all over the floor. It's gray, like gray powdery stuff. But they also sell this concrete mix, which has the cement in it as well as the stone and sand all pre-mixed and put in the bag. And it's kind of useful if you're just going to make a very small batch of concrete for something, especially if it's something that's not all that important. Like, let's say you need to put a little cement around your, a pole to hang your clothes or to put your mailbox box up. Or maybe if you're putting up a fence or something like that, you just need some small batches of cement. A concrete, you don't want to bother going and buying sand and stone and then, you know, using the mixer and all that stuff. You can just, well, you still should use the mixer, but you can just buy these bags. You throw the bags in the mixer, you throw a little bit of water in and you dump it in the hole and it's done. Or you even just take the bag and throw it in a bucket, throw a little water in it, mix it up and dump it in. I don't think the mix is as good as really good mix made from regular Portland cement and stone and sand. And I say that because it's a mixture that comes from the plant with sand and stone in it. And if, you know, I'm thinking if the sand isn't perfectly dry or the stone isn't perfectly dry when they put that mixture together, it's probably gonna kind of spoil the cement that's in there a little bit. And I just like mixing it myself. I just think it makes a better mix from my limited experience with those bags. But it does work, and like I say, if it's something that's not very important, it's great. They're very handy. They're very expensive. I mean, to buy the amount of cement necessary to, or the amount of concrete necessary to make a sidewalk, for example, that ready-made concrete or that ready-mix concrete stuff where you just add water, would cost you a lot more than if you bought the bags of Portland cement and then went and bought sand and stone at your local gravel bank. It would be a lot less expensive to do it that way. And as I said, I think it's better. So something to look at. As far as the sand and stone, what to use. Sand, you want to use a nice clean sand. You don't want it full of sticks and leaves and crap. And you want the sand to be a little bit of a coarser sand. Usually gravel pits will have a mason sand, what they call for doing block walls and things. It's a nice sand, but you can use pretty much any sand. I don't really recommend very, very fine sand, which is more like a silt, where the sand is about the same consistency as the cement. You don't really want to... I think it's better to have something a little bit more larger grain than that. And as far as the stone goes, just any crushed stone works fine. If you have a lot of stones on your property, you can also use those. You can go around in pails and pick up a couple pails of small stone, and you can use that. Just wash it first, get all the topsoil and sticks and crap off it, and you can use those. In fact, my father, being the old cheapskate that he was, used to take those kinds of stones and put them in the bottom of the forms when we were doing our sidewalks and stuff. He would put stones around the bottom, and he'd pour the cement around those stones, so there's actually more stones in the cement. And it's fine. It's very strong, and you wet them down first and put the cement over them, and it works out fine. But these days, I'm not as energetic as my father. I'm kind of lazy, so I just go get stone at the gravel pit and do it that way. But anyway, just normal crushed stone. You can get maybe stone that are about an inch or something like that across. Inch and a half stone is fine. Regular crushed stone. It doesn't need to be anything fancy. Again, you just want to make sure it's clean. You don't want a lot of leaves and stuff in there, because leaves and sticks rot away, and then you'll have holes in your cement, and it makes it less strong. The last thing I want to cover is rebar and mesh. Cement is very strong in for compression. It's very hard to cement's not very strong. Concrete, I keep getting my terms mixed up. Concrete is very strong compression-wise. You can put an awful lot of weight on it. It won't break or fall apart. It's very strong that way. But it sucks when it comes to tensile strength, or if you go to pull apart concrete, like if you were to grab a piece and pull hard outward, it would fall apart because it's not that strong that way. Steel, on the other hand, is just the opposite. Steel's not very good for compression. If you had a little quarter-inch piece of steel, a piece of wire is a good example. Just a piece of average wire, steel wire. It can be pretty small wire, in fact. And you push in on it, it's just going to bend. Steel's not very strong that way. It bends and flexes, and I mean, you can't actually squeeze the wire, and make it oval or whatever, but you can certainly squish it from the ends. But try and pull that wire apart. That wire's it's extremely strong in its tensile strength. And of course, concrete's just the opposite. So what engineers have done over the years is you marry the two, and you end up with a damn strong product. So how they do it is they put rebar. There's two different kinds of reinforcing materials for concrete. There's rebar, and then there's a wire mesh. The rebar are pieces of metal pipe. They're solid steel I'm calling them pipe. It's not really a pipe. It's a solid steel bar is what it is. And it's got little ridges on it that when you put it into the concrete, the concrete goes around those ridges and it kind of holds it nice and tight. And it's very, very strong. The rebar would take an incredible amount of strength to rip that rebar apart. It's steel, you know, it's very, very well made and very strong. And alternatively, there's, like I say, this reinforcing mesh, which you can buy both of these at your local lumberyard, Home Depot, whatever. And the mesh is just a metal. It's like little. It looks like a fence almost, but it's a much heavier metal, and it's like on like maybe 3-inch squares or 4-inch squares of this material. And that's like if you're making a sidewalk or a driveway, you would use that mesh. You would put that down in the cement instead of using rebar. It's a little bit easier and a little bit quicker to use, and does the same thing. But if you want it to be really strong. A little bit of a stronger application than you'd actually use the rebar. I always use rebar. I just like it better. But, I mean, the mesh works as well. It does the job. So how do you use this stuff? Well, concrete, cement, as I said, it's very good at compression, but horrible at when you go to stretch it. So if you were to look at a 4x8 by 6-inch deep concrete slab, let's say it's a bridge. That's easy to imagine. It's a bridge. So it's supported. This slab is supported at either end. And in the middle is over the water, of course, or whatever it is you're bridging. As you put a weight on that slab, if you look at it from the side, you won't actually see this, but you can imagine it, the top part of the slab is being compressed. And the bottom part of the slab is being stretched. It's just physics. You remember from physics. So if you have weight coming down from the top half of the slab is going to be compressing, and the bottom half of the slab is going to be being stretched. And that's just the way it works in physics, like I say. So what you would want to do in that case is you would want to put the rebar or the reinforcing mesh in the bottom of the slab. You know, maybe an inch up. You'd put an inch of cement in or something, concrete in or something like that, and you'd put the slab, and then you'd put an inch of concrete, and then you'd put the wire mesh or the rebar on top of that, and then you would pour the remaining, 5 inches or whatever it is of concrete on top of that. So that wire mesh is near the bottom. So it'll be right where that tensile strength, that stretching, pulling apart force is right where they are, and it'll help hold that slab together. If you have a predicament where it's just the opposite, let's say something's being held in the middle and the two ends are where the weight's going to be going, pushing down. Let's say you have a bridge with a center support. That might be the case in the center of the bridge. We have the center support and then the concrete's hanging out over the edges. In that case, where would you want to put the rebar? Think again about the stresses. In that case, it would be just the opposite. The rebar would want to be up near the top of the slab, because the top of the slab, it's going to be hanging over and wanting to droop down from the center. So the top is going to be wanting to stretch and the bottom is going to be wanting to compress. So that's how you would do it. And of course, to get it really, make it really strong, you could put it on the top and on the bottom. And then it'll just really make an extremely strong slab, which will hold up to forces coming from the bottom, rebounding forces coming from the bottom, forces from the cars on the top and any kind of rebounding forces from the bottom. And putting rebar in also is not so... In addition to making the concrete stronger for supportive, it also makes it stronger in terms of cracking. If the concrete ever does crack for some reason, the rebar will hold it together. It'll hold it from separating. So it's good to put it in even if it's just like a sidewalk. If I make a sidewalk, I usually put 2 or 3 sticks in lengthwise just to help hold it together. Rebar is cheap. You just throw a couple pieces in and just... If it were to crack somehow, that would help hold it together and it wouldn't start separating and it wouldn't start, it wouldn't start getting higher on one side of the crack than the other and things like that. It just holds it together. So that's how rebar works. I recommend putting some in anytime you do any kind of pour that's of any size. The last thing I want to talk about is problems with concrete. And the main problem, and you've all seen it, I'm sure, is you walk out of your local store and you look down at the concrete and the top's all rough. You know, when they first put the concrete, it's all pretty. But, excuse me, need a drink of coffee there. My throat's starting to go. It's the hazard of this occupation, podcasting. The top of the concrete gets all, they call it spalling or just chipping of the top, flaking, whatever you want to call it. The top of the concrete pops off. And, you know, why does that? You usually see this in the colder climates, which is a good hint as to why this happens. There's three real reasons why this happens, and you can address all three of them, really. They're not hard. The first and most common reason is that the person that has a sidewalk is probably using a lot of salt. Now, what happens with salt on sidewalks? The salt itself doesn't hurt the sidewalk at all. What hurts the sidewalk is the freeze-thaw cycles. Now, if you don't use salt, you know, usually it rains and the rain dries up, or if it's really cold, it'll snow, and the snow sits on top of the sidewalk, and the sidewalk never even really gets wet. Or let's say it's kind of warm and the snow hits the sidewalk, and it may be wet, and then maybe it'll turn cold, and then the concrete will get a little bit cooler, and then the snow will start sticking to it and start building up. But, you know, in all these cases, the concrete itself never really gets that cold where any water that's soaked into the concrete will freeze. It does happen, certainly, but it's not something that happens at every storm, and we don't have very many storms if you actually count them. So a concrete piece just sitting there, you know, those freeze-thaw cycles probably won't bother it too much. The problem is when you have very cold weather, let's say it's 10 degrees out or something like that, and there's some ice on the sidewalk because a little bit of water fell and froze, or you didn't clean the snow off well, which is usually the case, and you go and put salt on it, or calcium chloride or one of the melting agents, what happens is you force that water to melt in that snow or ice to melt in a very cold situation. And it does melt, and that's good, so you don't fall or whatever. And that water, you know, you turn the ice into water, and the water soaks into the concrete. And if it doesn't dry up soon, like let's say it melts in the afternoon, and it's starting to get really cold, colder than that salt or melting agent keep it from freezing. It gets too cold, it starts freezing again. Or if the salt gets, you know, just washed away and there's just not enough of a concentration of it, the water that's soaked into the sidewalk will actually start to refreeze inside the sidewalk. Because concrete's a porous material. It's got lots of little pores and stuff. The water will soak down into it, and it'll freeze underneath the surface of the sidewalk. And, of course, when water freezes, it expands. And when it expands inside something that won't expand, it breaks that something. And that's what happens. It actually expands and breaks the top layer of the concrete right off the sidewalk. And that's what causes that, mainly. And there's a couple things you can do to stop that from happening. The first thing is to not use salt. If you don't need to, you know, scrape it off if you can. You know, sunlight will do a lot of melting if you get the bulk stuff off. If you do have to use a little bit of salt, use it early in the morning and try and get it scraped off by night so that it doesn't refreeze. You know, try and push the material off and try and get it to dry up by the time night falls so it doesn't refreeze again. I mean, that's just good anyway. You don't want it to refreeze and cause ice again the next morning. See, most people don't care. They'll just throw more salt on it. And that's what kills the concrete. And the other thing, you know, if you cannot use any salt at all, that's better. But you can also use, you can't really, because like I say, you can't really mix it, but if you order concrete, you can order air and train concrete. And the air and train concrete has more of those voids in the concrete, those empty holes. And so there's actually air kind of in the concrete mix. And what that does is allow for more space for that water to expand. There's more of those little holes, and they're bigger. So the water, when it freezes, has a little bit more space to expand. And it's supposed to be much more resistant to that spalling effect. Another cause for spalling is if you had a mix that was too wet. too much water, not enough sandstone and cement. That will make the cement mix weak and could cause that as well. And the last reason is when you pour the concrete, if you work and finish it too quick, you work it too much. When you first pour concrete, water rises to the surface. It just has it comes out of the mix. It rises to the surface. It always does. And if you keep working that water into the surface of the concrete is too wet. It remains too wet, and again, it does the same thing what I just told you, is that it becomes a weaker mix. So you really want to pour it, level it off, and we'll talk about this, but you want to let that water rise to the surface, and you can like just push it off a little bit and let it kind of start drying and setting up before you start to actually mix it, so you're not mixing the water into the surface, and that will stop that from happening. So that's kind of my primer on concrete and cement. I'm going to have another podcast on doing foundations for homes and another podcast on doing sidewalks, because there are two projects that you probably will do if you're going to put a house in, and it's very good to know how it's done. Even if you have it done by somebody else, you can watch them and make sure they do it correctly. But I encourage you to try and do these things yourself. I mean, a foundation's a big project. I didn't do foundation myself, and I wouldn't unless I was using the new ICF forms, which we'll talk about. But generically speaking, a foundation's a pretty big job, and it's got to be done right. It's got to be square and true. Otherwise, your house will be tough to build your house on an unsquare, untrue foundation. So you might want to spend money to have the foundation put in. But certainly, little jobs like sidewalks and patios and front steps and things like that, you can do that yourself. In worst case, if you screw up, you break it up and do it again. It's not the end of the world. So, you know, that's why I want to teach you how to do that, explain the process and stuff so you can save some money. And like I say, if you want to get it done right, you do it yourself. It's typically how they always say to do it. So with that, I'm going to sign off. Another quick thanks out to Daryl Dodge for the theme song, and a bigger thanks to you for listening to this, the Homeowners Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life that you can, even on a rice and beans budget. I'm Steve, your host, and I thanks again for listening. Bye-bye. Till next time. Castle, this one's just a hassle. Home on a blue.